All right, this is the last talk on the five principles, principle number five. But let's do a little review. So the first principle is? And how do we articulate that principle in unity? What do we say about that? There's one presence and one power active in my life and in the universe, God the good. And we affirm that every Sunday. And now I know that sometimes we have an exception to that principle. Anybody ever have an exception to the principle that there's just God going on? Well, that's why we have principle number two. And what is principle number two? We are the one. You know, we're created in God's image and likeness. We are divine. We are children of God. And so our purpose is to be here to make the difference. We are unto our world, just like Jesus, the Christ of God, unto our life. We are that one. We are it unto our own life experience. And that gives us a sense of empowerment because we need to understand who we are and who we've come here to be. And that leads us to the third principle, and that is we create our own personal reality. That's right. We create our own personal reality through our thoughts, through our behaviors, through our emotions, through our actions. And so it's the law of mind action. It's the principle that we co-create with God. And so if there's some aspect of our life that looks and feels against us, then we have to look inside of ourselves for our own sense of disconnect. And we can only have our life look and feel against us when we're not connected to our own sense of well-being and worth. Is that not the truth? When we are connected to our own sense of well-being and worth, we can have any kind of experience and we know it's for us. But when we're living in the disconnect, then we create out of that sense of not enough or out of that sense that we don't matter so much. And then we look out at our life and it looks and feels against us, but we don't recognize that we have helped co-create the very experiences that we would rather not have. But the good news is there's principle number four. And what's that principle? We can transform our life through spiritual practices. And yes, prayer and meditation is an important aspect of that. But it's important for us to recognize that part of our God job is to transform our life. Because there's nothing out there in the world that wants us to be different than how we are in terms of our being subjected to a life that looks and feels against us. And so we have to overcome the belief in separation. We have to overcome the sense of being separate from life. And we have to look to spiritual principles and the way showers that have given us a glimpse of this dimension of ourself that is the reality of principle, the reality of spirit. And that leads us to principle number five. And so today we're going to be talking about being the change. It's insufficient to know the truth. We must live it in our life. This is what principle number five tells us. We must live the principle. And so today my talk is called Choose Your Simulation. And so what I mean by that, it'll be a little bit more clear, but just for now, think about how much of our life is spent in an internal dimension of ourself that is kind of experiencing a simulation of life as opposed to us being present to our life as it is. So I'm going to, first of all, last Sunday when I was, just before I concluded my talk, I shared a video. How many of you were here last Sunday? Okay, so a lot of you weren't here last Sunday, so you didn't see the video. So let me just say what the video was, and then I have a little shorter version of the video, so you'll have a sense of what that was about. So Jane and I teach a class through Unity Worldwide Spiritual Institute called The Eye of the Storm. It's based upon a book that I've written. And we invite our students, after they've gone through the class, to participate in a 21-day, day-by-day reconciliation journaling process, similar to the Q process, but it's the Q light version. It's a little bit easier version. But meanwhile, they go through a 21-day process of reflecting each day back and seeing where in their life that they fail to live up to their own standards of integrity, being who they've come here to be, and to simply take it upon themselves to ask their heart, if given the gift of tomorrow, what would I want to do differently? What would be the difference that I would want to make, given I would have a chance for a redo? And so each of our students then experienced going through this exercise for 21 days, and then they developed a sense of what it's like to be present to each moment from your heart. And so part of the practice is that we go to our heart, just like we do every Sunday in our meditation, and really open our heart and really seek the guidance and wisdom of this dimension of ourself that is of a greater mind than our conditioned self. And then they tell their stories about what happens when they go to their heart, and they begin to allow their heart to guide them into a different experience, otherwise different than what their conditioned self would tend to create or tend to want to generate instead. So I'm going to share this video of Steve, and he's going to be talking about his experience. And then guess what? We got their papers, their final papers, and Steve writes a little bit more about his experience, and I'm going to ask Jane to share that part of the story. So here's Steve.
Boy, so we were at a Rockies game, and we were in the middle of the row, and on one side there was a partition, so you could only get out of the row on one side. And so we had gotten up a few times to do various things, to walk around, get some food, drink, whatever. And the guy at the end of the row, kind of an older gentleman, maybe in his 60s,
finally,
like, maybe on the first time, he said, "Next time you'll have to crawl over me if you want to pass again." I couldn't tell if he was serious or joking or what, but I just kind of kept my cool and just, you know, walked up the stairs. And so I started, you know, thinking about, and of course the ego is more than happy to offer a lot of unpeaceful thoughts. I said, you know, what's going on here? You know, what's the storm? What did I bring here? And the thought that I had come, that came in, was about control and connection issues. And so I kind of went through that a little bit, and then I said, well, what do I recommend? Because I got to walk by this guy again. So what do you recommend? You know, because by this time I, you know, was really heart-centered, really quiet and calm. And so the thought that came in was, buy him a bottle of water. And I thought, oh, well, yeah, I shouldn't have to bribe them. You know, I paid for the seat, and of course, there goes the ego again. And so I just said, okay, all right, I'm going to buy him a bottle of water. And then about that time, too, I got a download kind of this guy, just about, you know, his loneliness issues and connection issues and some other stuff. And I knew I had connection issues too. So, you know, this gift was just kind of about love. It wasn't a pride. And so I ended up getting a bottle of water. So we came back to the seats, and, you know, and I walked up to him, you know, and he kind of looks up kind of weary and grumpy. And so I handed him the bottle of water, and I said, you know, here's a peace offering, brother. And man, the whole like scene just like changed. I mean, man, he jumped up like a little teenager, and he was all smiling, and he was all happy, and he started talking like a million miles a minute. But just in that moment, there was just such love. There was just such connection. It could have easily have gone the other way. And so I felt it, he felt it, you know, and then we ended up walking back to our seats. But instead, I really just kind of tapped into the heart that day, and it really showed me kind of a different way of living, a different way of experiencing and just being in a connection. It was just beautiful.
All right, so now we get his paper. We read his paper, and so Jane's going to do this part.
And yes, that was a cat around his neck.
So his cat?
It was his cat, yes. So when we got his paper, we were surprised to see there were a couple more stories. We thought he would just tell that story on paper, because during that session, we had everybody share their story, and we said to them, that's great, write about those things when we get the paper. But he went beyond. So here's his, I'm going to read it verbatim, what he said. My girlfriend and I were on a patio eating dinner, and there was a group of loud girls at a table that were hitting the wine kind of hard. They were finished with dinner, but having some very passionate discussions. I think everyone on the patio was hoping they would quiet down. But the more we saw the cause as outside of us, the more raucous and obnoxious the behavior became and continued. I grabbed my girlfriend's hands and we said a little prayer and let go of negative beliefs we were holding on to. And we sent love to them. And then we continued our dinner. Suddenly, a big gust of wind came through, and honestly, it seemed to mostly hit the table where these girls were sitting. And since they were done eating, they just quickly gathered everything up and left. And then the wind just as suddenly died down, and the patio was back to being quiet and peaceful. That's one story. One more story had me at another restaurant, and the hostess told us that their patio was open seating. So I stood by a table on the patio waiting for the busser to come by and clean the table. And while I was standing there, an older lady, probably 60 or so, fast walked over to me and said that that was their table, and the hostess told them they could have it. Well, I realized that the other gal in their group that had gone to ask the hostess was actually behind me. So I was actually next in line for that table. But I was in peace and love that day. And when I looked deep into her eyes, I almost teared up because I could feel her inner turmoil and her fear and her anxiety. And I immediately relinquished the table to her. We ended up going inside, and about 15 minutes later, it started to rain really hard. I'm not saying that spirit rained on them, but I think spirit knew it was about to dump and it would not be fun trying to gather up our dinner plates and drinks and cutlery and move into an already full bar. So sometimes I think we're guided away from unpleasant situations as well. And I think it's important to stay in our peace to get the most from life. And he ends by saying, I guess this is the bonus module from the Eye of the Storm.
Yeah, that's so cool. So wait a second. So the neat thing about this is that he wanted to make it plain and clear that he wasn't using his heart to try to control what life is all about.
Right. Yes. He was just listening and following what his heart told him, and so you know the message isn't that that when people are. If you send love to people that irritate you, a big wind's going to come blow them out of your life. Or that when somebody's being really difficult, that the rain's just going to pour down on them. But just the point that he's starting to listen just to what his heart tells him and to really check in and ask, what's for me to do? Where should I go? What should I do? And having these amazing experiences happen. And as a side note, he told us he's going to be teaching the Eye of the Storm in his church now. So I think he'll do an amazing job at that. Anyway.
So the real important thing is to get that Steve was able to shift out of his autopilot, in other words, his reactive self. He acknowledged that he was triggered or he was bothered. But he knew what he needed to do. He needed to step out of the simulation that was being created by virtue of his, you know, annoyance about what was happening. And then he took an active step of getting heart-centered and then waiting for that message, that voice, that that sense of, okay, this is where I need to come from. And when we give ourselves that kind of pause and be able to offer ourselves in the sense of being used by spirit, connecting through our heart, then something else comes through that enables us to create a totally different outcome. I mentioned last time about the autopilot, and there's an aspect of our brain that routinely goes into the autopilot mode because it's the best way our brain, for the brain, it's best for our brain to make sure that we're asleep because it does such a better job of maintaining us. And so, as I mentioned last time, system one, these are actual terminologies associated with brain science. The system one brain is our autopilot brain. It's the part of us that moves very rapidly to making sure that we're safe and okay. This part of our brain, the autopilot, would rather be wrong 99% of the time than miss the one time it failed to protect us. But the problem is, it's not the autopilot. The problem is that we're asleep and we just allow the autopilot to create our life. And we talked a little bit about what the dynamic of the autopilot is in terms of consciousness. On one level, the primary function is to react, to make sure that we're safe. And so we talked last week about a cascade. When we're triggered, we actually go through a cascade where all the various systems within our brain begin to act very quickly to create a state of hypersensitivity with respect to how our life looks and feels in the outer. So when we're on autopilot, we're totally focused on how we're having our life. And there's very little, if none, no self-awareness at all. In addition to that, there is a dynamic of the autopilot that maintains the kind of status quo, that keeps us on the same course. And so our habits of being, having, doing, our habits of feeling, of believing, of perceiving, all of these are a part of the autopilot. And we can be in our life conscious and awake in a sense, but we can be living in the autopilot's routine and not be a sense of presence in our life. And therefore not necessarily think in terms of altering our state, or rather challenging what's going on in the simulations that are a byproduct of what the autopilot is all about. What I didn't talk about last Sunday, which is goes to an important part of what I'm wanting to present today, and that is there is a neurological dimension of this very circuit that we can describe in terms of our reactive self and the part of our self that keeps us on course. And that is, it's called the default mode network. It's a neurological system that keeps our brain in the autopilot mode because that's where it's most efficient. The challenge is that our default mode network doesn't necessarily have an altruistic dimension to it. It just simply wants to keep us safe at all costs. And one of the ways in which the default mode network accomplishes that is that it routinely runs simulations in our head. Now, we may think of those simulations as the stories in our head or the voice in our head. Have you ever walked along and found yourself deep in some kind of imagination or wondering and feeling kind of yucky because of it? Have you ever had that experience? And we have those experiences hundreds of times in each day, but they live as a routine in our head, and it doesn't necessarily rise to the level of our really believing that our whole state is being hijacked by an internal process of running simulations for the purpose of making sure we can predict and control our life. This is what our brain is designed to do, to run simulations that simulate our life is threatened by external circumstances, and so we have to pay attention. Now imagine when we're so focused on how our life looks and feels that we really don't have the other dimension of our capacity, and that is to be able to examine the contents of our habits of being, for instance, or examine the reactions that are produced by our triggering moments. We have no means by which to transform those methodologies by word and without necessarily coming to terms with dealing with our default mode network. And so if we think about the part of us that is going into autopilot and then the part of us that is running simulations for the purpose of making sure that we're safe and okay, we have to override that circuitry if we are to actually create something that lives outside of our conditioned self. And so that's what I'm wanting us to look at next. And I'm going to share another video. And it's the content of this video is to focus on defining what our default mode network is. And the primary antidote or spiritual practice that counteracts the negative effects of our default mode network is meditation. In addition to meditation, There is also other activities such as Tai Chi and yoga, energy work, other things, other practices that we can do that take us out of our default mode network and out of the dimension of ourself that is on autopilot. And so watch this movie and then we'll have some fun.
There's no way a fidgety and skeptical news anchor would ever have started meditating were it not for the science. The science is really compelling. There's also a study out of Yale that looked at what's called the default mode network of the brain. It's a connected series of brain regions that are active during most of our waking hours, when we're doing that thing that human beings do all the time, which is obsessing about ourselves, thinking about the past, thinking about the future, doing anything but being focused on what's happening right now. Meditators not only turn off the default mode network of their brain while they're meditating, but even when they're not meditating. In other words, meditators are setting a new default mode. And what's that default mode? They're focused on what's happening right now. In sports, this is called being in the zone. It's nothing mystical, it's not magical, you're not floating off into cosmic ooze. You are just being where you are. The cliche in self-help circles is being in the now. You can use that term if you want, but because it's accurate. It's slightly annoying, but it's accurate. It's more just being focused on what you're doing. And the benefits of that are enormous. And this is why you're seeing these unlikely meditators now, why you're seeing US Marines adopting it, the US Army, corporate executives from the head of Ford to the founders of Twitter, athletes from Phil Jackson to many, many Olympians, scientists, doctors, lawyers, school children. It's this sort of elite subculture of high achievers who are adopting this because they know it can help you be more focused on what you're doing and it can stop you from being yanked around by the voice in your head.
All right, wouldn't that be a superpower to have, not being yanked around by the voice in your head? And so if we are understanding that our brain, the autopilot part of us, the default mode network, constantly runs simulations for the purpose of keeping us safe, and if we can also kind of get that whenever we're in a simulation, in other words, we're not paying attention to what's here, but we're in some dynamic where we're living in a different reality, but still running an experience, a life, a felt experience of living in this story that the story that is generated in our head. We need to understand that our brain does not know the difference between a simulation and a life experience. That in the context of what's going on in terms of our neurological self, our brain doesn't know the difference, but we know the difference. But if we're living in a simulation and we're experiencing all of its uncomfortable feelings, then our body is filled with the same chemistry as if we're triggered by an external event or circumstance. So that's why it's important for us to meditate, because what happens in our experience of meditating is that within 12 seconds or so, our mind wanders. And where does it wander? It goes into simulation. Our brain, every 12 seconds, wants to go into a simulation. And if we don't understand that's what our brain does, we'll go into the simulation, we'll still walk around and do our stuff, but we'll be thinking about some situation or some person, something at work, something at school, and it's making us feel awful or yucky, and we don't know that that's the simulation that's doing that. And if we're not awake and are able to see what the content of the simulation that is running our emotional state is, that's called being asleep while you're in autopilot. Remember the guy on the Tesla who is asleep? It's not that the Tesla was on autopilot that's the problem. The problem was the driver was asleep while it was in autopilot. That's the problem. And the problem for us is that we're asleep while we're in autopilot. And so I want to share a story. This is a recent story. I routinely go on walks every day, and I listen to a meditation tape, Dr. Joe, Meditation Blessing of the Energy Centers, number 3. I do this, and I've done this every day for the last 3 years. And I just pop the earbuds in and listen to it. And while I'm listening, I'll go into simulations intentionally. just to be discover what is in the content of my internal state so I know what's in there that I have to work on. And I became conscious of running a simulation about imagining them bringing our tiny house up to our property in Kettle Falls. Now, our tiny house is 15 and a half feet tall, and all along the road up to Kettle Falls are all of these bridges that say 14 feet 7 inches. You know, 14 feet 12 inches or 9 inches. The point is that every time I'm driving to Kettle Falls, I'm in a simulation worried about whether or not the house is going to make it undamaged. And I wake up in that simulation, and I feel all the tension in my body, the tightness, the anxiety, the worry, and recognize that this is a simulation. And so then I decide what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if I can get my higher self to run a simulation through the various circuits that are in my brain. And so this time I'm walking, and I stop, and I get heart-centered, open up myself to the presence of spirit, this beautiful forest of woods behind us where we live. And I'm just there, and then I start walking again. I'm still listening to Dr. Joe, but I've lost any sense of where that is, and I'm just paying attention, and then I go into another simulation right as I'm walking. Now, I'm still walking, listening, but now I'm in another simulation. I go back to my previous marriage with Nan, and she's in the process of dying, and I'm aware of my sadness over not being able to have the conversation with her because her brain cancer has gotten to the extent where she no longer has the cognitive capacity to have the kinds of conversations about loss, about dreams. And I saw myself in that place of extreme sadness for not being able to speak those words or have that conversation. And then at the same time, I also saw how at the time I did not adequately hold myself in a loving care, having experienced such a depth of hurt for not having been able to have this kind of exchange that would have had some completion for me. And so in that moment, I stopped again and gave myself a heavy dose of compassion. And really holding Gary in a way that I have never done that for myself before. And really felt a kind of taking in a part of me that has been outside of myself for so long. And then recognizing that I was in a simulation that my higher self created for me. I would never have chosen to go back to that moment, but because I was able to recognize that the simulation circuits are there to be used, why not let my higher self use those circuits to give me a simulation that can translate into integration and healing as opposed to a simulation that is just going to drive my nervous system wild. And so I left that experience recognizing that part of the message that my higher self was wanting to convey to me is, that is, our job is that we have to reprogram the autopilot. We have to reprogram those circuits that run us when we're not conscious. And we have to reprogram our default mode network because that's what keeps us locked into all the self-condemnation, all the self-loathing, all the evidence that we've gathered lives in those circuits that utilizes that evidence, that meaning-making, to hold us in a place of, you better be on the lookout. And when we begin to work against that and let go of that and enter into spiritual practices, beginning with the heart, opening the heart, and then bringing in the mind's clarity and its capacity to see and be the pilot of ourself, then we bring ourselves into a greater expression of who and what we've come here to be. And so I'll just simply end by this. Typically in a church service, those kinds of sounds would be unsacred, right? Annoyances. But we can spiritualize it. We can spiritualize any interruption by just coming up with like a $100 fee for when a phone goes off. And then we would welcome it, wouldn't we? We would welcome it. It wouldn't bother us at all. This is what I mean by choose your simulation. God bless you.
I am convinced that we are not here by accident, but by divine appointment. And I just have to share right now, I'm